You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome. Oh my goodness. I have to say, we're going to dig right into this because I'm so thrilled about this guest. You know, if for those who don't know, my birthday is December 26th. It's the day after Christmas. This holiday has always been very special to me. Growing up, I was in a very Catholic household, and you know, we spent a ton of time in church. My mom was a liturgist. My dad directed the church choir. We were in church a lot. I taught Sunday school, and then I grew up, and I kind of, you know, got to see the world without the blinders on it. And really, Christmas has a different meaning, and it's more about family and the people that you love and not having to go to work and sharing thanks and appreciation and love with the people that mean the most, not a deity, right? So whatever it means for you, go ahead, celebrate it. That's great. But today, I really wanted to bring someone on that can talk about, like, where did all this stuff come from? And I think that we have the most distinguished of guests that I've ever had on the show. So joining us today is Dr. Jacqueline Murray. And Dr. Murray is a medieval social historian. She's based out of the University of Guelph in Ontario, Canada, where she is a professor emeritus. I could go through her resume, dozens of published pieces that are referenced in its studies, and she is a noted humanitarian for her work in Ghana. She's has been given the Guelph Women of Distinction Award, John Bell Teaching of Excellence Award. She was elected Fellow of the Royal Society of Canada. That's a huge thing. It's like the highest honor for education and research in Canada. So, like, oh my God, I wish the show was 3 hours long. But so without further ado, Dr. Jacqueline Murray, hi.
Hi, Mark. It's great to talk to you. Wow, what an introduction.
What a resume. Like, what the hell are you doing with us? So I stumbled across an article that was published last year by the university. It was their news page, and it was entitled Christmas Traditions Rooted in Surprising History. And we're going to link that to the show. But I wanted to talk to someone that knew a lot about this. And, like, you do. So I guess to start, like, what's a baseline? How did you get into this?
Well, as a medieval historian, I am very interested in how people lived and what they thought and so on. And then I kept seeing aspects of our own society that reflected the Middle Ages that nobody knew and recognized. And then I saw all kinds of misapprehensions that people had about the Middle Ages and, you know, how they didn't really understand them. And, you know, if I think of something like Game of Thrones, I just go, because, you know, it's what people think about the Middle Ages.
Yes.
It wasn't like that. And then that just becomes an area that you start thinking about more and more. And Christmas is one of those holidays and cultural celebrations that goes back so many years, but we don't ever really think about the roots. We have a kind of religious story at the center, and we do all of these things, like put up Christmas trees, but we don't really know why or right. where they started. And so that's what interested me, is looking a bit further into some of these aspects of such a major celebration.
So, and I'm going to ask a question, and if feel free not to answer this, but for a baseline, are you someone that has a faith that you believe in, or are you more of like I believe in science and all that? Where are you coming at this from?
think I'm probably very similar to you, Mark.
Okay.
I was raised in a Christian household, very much so, and I find that I weave in and out of belief. I work, the Middle Ages was entirely, at least the area that I study, entirely a Roman Catholic society. And so you absorb a lot of the medieval Catholic beliefs as you're sure. studying away. And so on. So I don't know. I'm in an uncertain position. I wouldn't say I'm agnostic, but I wouldn't say I'm a believer either.
Yeah, it would be cool to have a place to go when we are no longer here, where everyone is in the whole land of milk and honey and all of that stuff. It'd be great. I would love that. Yeah. You know? So how?
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, right. Yeah, we will. How? Right. How did you get into medieval studies? Way at the outset.
Oh. Now, this is one of those miracle stories.
Okay.
Appropriate to the season.
Sure.
I was in my first year of university. I was completely lost. I was taking these courses, and I really had no idea what I wanted to do. And stop me if this begins to sound familiar to anybody at all.
Sure.
And I happened to hear a lecture on libraries in the Middle Ages.
Oh, wow.
And it was captivating. It was so different, but yet it seemed vaguely similar. Like we all go to libraries and read books, but our books aren't chained to the desks and so on. And anyway, it just got me so interested in this culture that I started taking courses in that area of history and literature, and became more and more interested, and ended up somehow going to graduate school after having not been a very distinguished first-year student. and then here I am. I've been teaching about the literature.
Wow, that's awesome. So as we kind of venture into the subject of the day, Christmas in the medieval times. What is that like?
Interestingly enough, it wasn't that important a holiday in the Middle Ages. It was certainly recognized as a holiday by the 4th century, and theologians and so on talked about it. And there were, you know, readings of the Nativity story in church, but they were in Latin, so the average rural farmer and his family didn't really know what was happening anyway. But there were images and pictures of the Nativity, but it wasn't Easter was the big holy celebration, not so much Christmas. But Christmas also had a social function. That comes out of the deep past, but had implications still in the Middle Ages. And that's that it's the darkest time of the year, but it's a period of time also when farmers and rural people are on a kind of a break. They've already reaped all the fields and gathered in all the grain. It's too early to sow new seeds, so they don't have as much to do, and they can relax a little bit. And so that's, I think, a significant part of it. The other part is that it was a time when the lords of manors and so on might hold a small celebration for the tenants. The tenants might pay their rent. The Lord might give tenants something like a gift or a glass of ale or whatever, because everyone was more relaxed. And then there was this Christmas celebration, but it never was a big celebration with a lot of cultural observances, probably until about 1223, and St. Francis of Assisi, who we all know, of course, yes, as the saint that protects animals and pets and so on.
My mom's favorite saint.
Yeah, a lot of people's favorite saint, and for a lot of really good reasons.
Yes.
He was very concerned that the humble folk, the people who were not educated and couldn't read the Bible in Latin and didn't always sort of understand what was going on in church because it was in Latin, you know, and really up until the Second Vatican Council in the 1960s, it was all Latin all the time. So, Francis of Assisi at Christmas took a manger into the church and live animals and had a little baby in the manger. And he went through the Christmas story with the people, the nativity story, with these live living creatures acting it out. So that was the first nativity play. And that really brought home the story of the Christmas and the Christmas message to people in a way that a wall painting or a sermon might not have. It became a living thing.
That's crazy. I didn't know that. When was Christmas decided to be on that time, the December 25th? I don't know if
that's a big question. Who knows? There was no specific decree, but a lot of things are happening around that time of year. It is, of course, the winter solstice, and so it's the darkest time of year, a time that has been celebrated certainly 2,000, maybe even 4,000 years before the Common Era. And because it was the time of the sun's furthest distance from the earth, it was the longest night, and people kind of feared what was going to happen. Would the sun come back? Mm. And so they celebrate when they can tell that the day is getting longer again. And of course, that's why we have Stonehenge and all those stone circles and so on, because they're measuring the sun's distance. So they know exactly when that's happening. So that was a period of celebration across cultures, particularly in Scandinavia and the Germanic areas where we get a lot of our traditions. So that's one thing. And then for the Romans, this was the celebration of Saturnalia was actually on December 25th, which was also the official day of solstice for the Romans. So they didn't do December 21st. They said December 25th. And this was a celebration of the sun god and God who dies and comes back. That's part of the sun god.
We're gonna pick this up right after this. Here we're talking with Dr. Jacqueline Moyer and about the origins of Christmas. So stick around. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back. We are talking with Professor Jacqueline Murray. And she is this is awesome. I love this. She's talking about where Christmas came from. And we were on the other side of the break talking about how the Romans celebrated on December 25th, the solstice, not on the 21st. And so I'm sorry to cut you off, but keep going. This is good stuff.
Okay.
Sorry.
Well, so Christianity developed inside the Roman Empire. And so they absorb a lot of the Roman traditions and practices. And as well, it was thought that if they celebrated the birth of Jesus on December 25th, it was a way of gradually co-opting Saturnalia, which was kind of a wild party, and Christianizing it as the faith was spreading in the first four centuries of this common era. And so there was a kind of coalescing of all these different factors, the solstice, Saturnalia, the birth of Jesus. They're all kind of coming together at roughly the same time, and then they settle on December 25th.
That's crazy.
Probably because of the importance of the Romans.
Sure. And, you know, it's interesting where you talk to people that are kind of, you know, that understand some that, you know, Christian traditions are not necessarily Christian traditions in Christian fashion. They like to take things and make it their own. But they say, oh, this is pagan. This is pagan. What is that? What are they talking about? Are they right? Are they wrong?
Well, some aspects have roots in pre-Christian belief systems. Pagan, by the way, was just the Latin word for country dweller, because country dwellers did not, they weren't there in the cities hearing the sermons and the lectures and being converted to Christianity as quickly. So their traditional beliefs lasted longer than cities they did in city dwellers. So Christianity's great success, really, was as it moved and expanded, it incorporated aspects of traditional society. So if villagers in this one, you know, place in rural France said that this was a magical creek belonging to the goddess of somebody or other, then the Christians said, oh, that must be a Virgin Mary's creek. And you know, they just kind of slowly introduce these ideas and take beliefs. And that's part of even where we get possibly the Christmas tree.
Okay.
St. Boniface going through Germany trying to convert people, and he finds the holy oak tree, the tree of Thor, and he sees these pagan people about to sacrifice a child at the, this is all probably made up.
Okay. It's like, oh my God.
And and he grabs an axe and he chops down the tree, and in its place, an evergreen tree grows. Hmm. And so that becomes an important symbol. The evergreen tree replaces the oak tree.
It's you know, it's fascinating to me. This is a sidebar. How many things, you know, we learned in the Catholic Church of, oh, well, the Christmas tree, it's evergreen. It symbolizes that God's love for us is evergreen, like something like that, you know. And then hearing why, or hearing, well, we eat fish on Fridays because, you know, that's just we're fasting and all that. And it's like, no, BS. The fish industry had a really good lobbyist. You know?
Well, it's true that the Fridays were a fast day, so they weren't supposed to eat meat. That was a church rule. But I'll tell you, the evergreens go right back to the Druids and people who would bring evergreen boughs into their house because it did symbolize a kind of endurance as a way of making it through this dark period of December. And similarly, mistletoe was brought in because it was considered a fertility symbol and safety. And people hung holly wreaths well before we started doing this in Western Christianity because they thought the prickles would protect the house. Because during this period of darkness, it was a time when all kinds of evil things could be at work, because it was so dark you couldn't see. And believe me, none of us living now understand what it is to be in a world in which there is no ambient light whatsoever.
Oh, yeah.
Pitch blackness.
That's terrifying.
And people
yeah.
are nervous. Yeah. And so they think that there's these sprites and things that are out that, if not actually evil, could be mischievous, and you want to keep them out of the house. So you put a holly wreath in the hope that that'll keep them away. And if it doesn't, they'll get caught on the little spikes of the holly.
that's crazy.
So protective. All those wow. things were protective.
Yeah, that's a really good point, is that I think with so much of history and even and we talk about this on the show all the time of you know, political beliefs and all of that, if you don't put yourself in the shoes of those folks, yeah, I mean, going outside when there's no light and having the light and the darkness just increase, but that's a terrifying thing, you know. We're talking with Dr. Jacqueline Murray. We got one more segment with her. We're going to talk a little bit about, just like she said, how are these things impacting us today? Stick around in the Rational Revolution. We'll be right back. One more segment here with Dr. Jacqueline Murray, and she's also, for the listeners, an incredible expert on sexuality and masculinity coming into from the Middle Ages into today. And you know, I saw also an episode with where it was Gavin Newsom and friend of the show, my friend Tim Miller, and they were talking about, you know, the masculinity crisis and all that stuff. So we talked about this off air. I would love to have you back to talk about that subject too. Because you're a freaking expert on that stuff as well. So,
thanks, Mark. Yeah, love to.
Yes. So we were talking about all of the things, you know, mistletoe and wreaths, and it's interesting as you're mentioning these things. It's like, yep, check, got that. Yep, we got bows around the fireplace. Yep, got that. Got a Christmas tree. Got a wreath. Holy cow! Like that's a lot. Hundreds and hundreds of years later, it still is impacting us today.
So, Mark, let me ask you, did you get a Yule log for dessert?
So, I've never had one. I'd love to eat one, yes.
So, those ice cream logs that we eat, Yule logs, I find that is one of the most curious practices that's endured at all. And there's that song, I forget its technical name, or, you know, its correct name, but it's got the line, Yuletide carols being sung by a fire.
Yes.
So,
it's the,
that?
Yes.
That's Yuletide. You know.
And folks dressed up like Eskimos.
Yep.
Yes. Yeah.
So, Yule logs were a particularly Germanic and Scandinavian practice, and they go at the beginning of the darkness of the solstice and cut down a big tree and drag the tree into the house, into the fireplace. And they tried to keep the fire going with that one tree, pushing it further and further into the house.
Oh, my God.
And if they could keep it lit through the whole period, it would bring good fortune to the house. And this practice, you can see drawings in the 18th century of people pulling Yule logs along. But this also was Yule Log. Oh, I forget where I was going to go with Yule Log. So well.
No, that's fast. So
the
so,
origin of wassail.
Oh, because, yes.
Again, here we come wassailing. We have them in our Christmas carol.
What is that? Well, I have no idea what the hell that is. No pun intended.
It's a kind of ale mixed with honey. It's, you know,
good?
Ale and honey. And they'd be drinking it and they'd be giving it to guests and so on. But they also, before they cut down the tree, anointed it with wassail, kind of recognizing that the tree was giving up its life in order to keep them safe through this dark solstice period.
Wow. It's
and so was.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, so wassail became, you know, one of the, it's just a fancy name for ale and with stuff like we have sangria and so on. Yes. So, you know, it's a drink with fruit and so on. And that became kind of associated as a Christmas drink because of this ancient practice with the Yule log and the wassail.
So when did, like, if way back Christmas was kind of like for the medieval folk, it probably wasn't a bank holiday, you know, to get the day off of work, paid holiday. When did that really become, was it the 1223, you think, when people, it kind of clicked?
And in the 13th century, the church became more conscious that it had to do a better job of telling average believers what the faith was and what how they believed in it and tell the stories better and more clearly. So it grows a lot after that, but it's still at the end of the Middle Ages, for example, in 1536, that the first Christmas tree was brought into Strasbourg Cathedral. And that's the first time that we hear of a real tree being brought into a place that with hard historical evidence. There's lots of thoughts that people were starting already before that to bring trees into their house, but that's the very first one. It was Martin Luther that suggested putting candles on it to illuminate the tree, because of course they're all focused on the return of the light and Jesus' birth as the bringing light to the world.
It's interesting to, you know, I instinctively, you know, and I talk to my wife about this all the time. Oh my God, it's so dark. I just can't wait till we get more light. I can't, you know, and it's like, we have street lights and we have things that, you know, push out the darkness. But like you said it so perfectly. We have no idea what that was like. And what a breath of, okay, we're past it. We're through it. We're getting, you know, I would want to celebrate that, you know?
Yeah, really. Because you know it happened last year, but do you really know it's going to happen next year?
Yeah.
Because, you know, you don't know exactly why it's happening, but you can map out how it happens across the year.
How many of like the Stonehenge's type things are out there? I know there's one in Appalachia, I believe.
Interesting.
You know,
I always think of that as a Northern European thing. Most of the stone circles are actually found in Scotland. There's over 400 of them. The Stones of Callanish on the Isle of Lewis being the most well-known. But there are a lot in Celtic areas. So I'm not sure if the Appalachian one would be indigenous and what its meaning would be. I don't travel across the Atlantic very much.
That's okay.
In my work.
I think there was one on like an episode of Josh Gates or something where it was America's Stonehenge says that they're like 4,000 years old or something like that.
Cool.
Yeah, it was really neat. But, you know, I think it's fascinating to, you know, you think of these people as such primitive folks, but I mean, they're They were pretty smart too. I mean,
yeah. Well, and look at all of the cultures of the Aztecs and the Incas and so on. And they were brilliant mathematicians, but they too were obsessed with following the sun.
Yeah. So when you look at Christmas and these types of holidays, it seems that, you know, medieval traditions are really just soaked all the way through them. Are there a couple that stick out to you as like, you know, make you smile or whatever? You see that and you're like, oh, I know, you know, what are the ones that you really kind of stick to?
Well, I have to say, I'm really captivated by how St. Francis's nativity scene has, the plays are done still in churches, and a lot of homes have little nativity scenes, and when I was growing up, sometimes they would move the three kings and the shepherds around.
Yes.
So, you know?
Yeah, we did that.
Yeah. And I think it's that story really invokes something in people's minds and in their hearts when they think of the whole situation and of the nativity and the, you know, no room at the inn and the difficulty of giving birth in that society without doctors and midwives and so on. And I think it speaks to a deep part of human nature, and we see it when modern filmmakers and storytellers turn the story into a story of homelessness.
Yes.
Or, you know, the people who have nothing now. And it evokes the same spirit in us of caring for others and their situations.
There was a church, I believe, in Massachusetts that put mock ICE agents at the manger, and holy cow, I mean, what an image, you know.
So powerful.
Yes. And there's something about the story that really connects, like you say, with people, you know, someone that doesn't have a lot of means, born to save humanity, you know, and that's, yeah, that can connect with so many people.
Yeah, yeah. And it makes us want to be better people and care for those less fortunate and so on.
And I think that's kind of what's cool about Christmas, is that you don't have to be a Christian to understand, you know, or you don't have to be a believer in Jesus to appreciate the kindness and the gentleness and the humility that the season can bring and bring out in people, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. I agree, Mark.
Yeah. And, you know, so fast forward just a little bit, you know, the Charles Dickens version of Christmas, but that has some traditions that we don't have today. And the ones that we do, I think, so that was very closely created by, you know, a lot of those traditions as well.
Yes. You know, Dickens comes kind of in the mid-19th century, just when Christmas is really getting going, and it's a really big deal. For example, it was Queen Charlotte in 1800 that brought the practice of a Christmas tree to England.
Oh.
And in about 1846, a picture of Queen Victoria and Prince Albert and the children gathered around the tree, lighting the candles, and there's baubles on it, gifts under it. And that was on the front of an English magazine. 3 years later, it was on the front of an American magazine. Wow. But they took off the crown and they took away Prince Albert's mustaches. Uh-huh. To make them look more American.
That scans.
yeah. And so in the 19th century was kind of a big time for the development of Christmas. The original story that we call The Night Before Christmas was actually called The Visit from St. Nicholas.
Ah,
and
yes.
It was first published in 1823.
Awesome.
So we get a lot of our Christmas ideas and Santa Claus and so on
yes.
from that story.
Right. Dr. Murray, thank you. This was so cool. I would love to have you back again to talk about some of the things that we talked about earlier. But I really, really appreciate your time today and sharing that with us. And that was so cool.
It was a pleasure, Mark. Thank you.
Thank you.
I had a great deal of fun.
Yes, thank you. We'll talk to you soon. We'll be right back on The Rational Revolution right after this. Just like yesterday, then I'll get on my knees and pray. We don't get fool again.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us. Another word for nothing left to lose. Nothing. I mean nothing, hon, if it ain't free.
And feeling good was easy now. Welcome back. When he sang a blues, you know. That was cool. My thanks to Dr. Jacqueline. That was really neat, and I'm so appreciative of her time, because I mean, I could go on and on. I have a 3 pages of what her resume is and the things that she's done, and we didn't even get into the humanitarian work that she's done in Ghana, that she's been recognized for up and down. I really hope she comes back and talks about some of the other stuff that she does, because oh my gosh, what a cool thing. what an amazing woman. I don't know how to make the transition here, but I got some comments this week about can you summarize where we are with the Trump address? And I'll talk about that. And I because a lot of people that messaged and called, they said, hey, I didn't watch it. Just tell me what happened. So ask and you shall receive. So President Donald Trump delivered that primetime address from the White House. He wanted to focus on his administration's record and agenda. And I think, kind of how that went was he was given an allotted time slot. I think it was like 15 minutes or whatever. The network said, yeah, whatever. Okay, you can do what you got to do. And he talked about the United States being on the cusp of an unprecedented boom. And he defended tariff policies, argued inflation was going away and all that. And the reaction that I had, we were talking about Scrooge, last week, and I'm as giddy as a schoolboy. I freaking loved it. I thought the address was fantastic, not because it was good in substance, but because it was just awful. And I was watching it, and my wife said, "How's it going?" I'm like, "This is great. This is awesome." Because he's just writing the attack ads that people can use against everything that he's done. And which by the way, this, I'm going to go on a little bit of a tangent here. If we are going to have these conversations about the things that he's done that is bad and negative and hurting people, what we have to do is we also have to acknowledge and admit, we don't have to say it, but at some point during that conversation with someone, they're going to say, hey, you just don't like it because it's Trump. It's just Trump. And you have to be prepared for that question, because there are things that he's done that are good. And it's okay to admit that, because when you do that, that gives the criticism and the critique that much more credibility. And guys, there are things that he's done that are okay. And just because Trump did it doesn't mean it's bad. Like, for example, Space Force. It was something that DOD officials, and yes, Hegseth, it is the Department of Defense. Department of Defense officials wanted that done for decades. I mean, they were blasting off nuclear weapons in space since the 60s to try to test what an EMP was and what kind of effect it had on things on the ground and all that. So like having a part of, you know, military that specialty is space, that is something that they thought was a good idea. And fast forward to this term, he floated doing a 40-year mortgage. Guys, that's a good idea. Like, it arguably is a good idea. He was like, oh my gosh, you're going to be paying for that house until you turn 70. Okay, cool. So you have a 30-year mortgage and someone that turns 40 and buys a house. What's that then? Like, a 40-year mortgage, and this is someone that's in that space. I do loans. I've worked with people on vehicles and all this stuff. Stretching out the term like that is not a negative thing. That actually opens up the opportunity of home ownership to a whole different generation of people. Like, that's not a bad thing. And just because the mortgage says it's 40 years doesn't mean they're going to take it out 40 years. That just means that they can pay it off at their pace, not the bank's, right? That's a good thing. So when you have those arguments, make sure that you also understand, because someone's going to say, you just don't like it because it's Trump. Well, no. And here's why. But anyway, back to his address. He touted, you know, oh, and by the way, you want to say something else good? Arguably, securing the southern border. That is a good thing. Republicans and Democrats alike do agree. That's a good thing. Now, to be fair, Joe Biden in the last year of his presidency, he did a horrible job in his first 3 years of his presidency on that. Democrats admit that. And last year, he tightened it up. And that was a lot, in large part, to Kamala Harris. Anyway, back to that wonderful agenda. He claimed prices are way down. Way down. And this is how they do that, by the way. He talked about the Thanksgiving turkey. Thanksgiving dinner is down. Trump's people and himself, he'll take like a sliver of truth, just the tiniest bit of truth, and then spread that like a blanket over the entire thing. So we'll say food prices are down. Look at this year's Thanksgiving dinner. It's down 30%. And it's like, bro, no. Here's what that is. He clipped a coupon for a turkey at Walmart. That's literally what happened. He found a coupon at Walmart that said Thanksgiving dinner this much. And it was down because, you know, what retailers do is they say, hey, we're going to cut our margins here because you're going to come in and buy all this other stuff. But if it's slim here, that's good. Food prices are down. No, that was down because there was a coupon, bro. But it was brilliant, and it was rambling, and it was meandering, and it wasn't very good. He talked about a warrior dividend funded by, you know, tariffs, but what it really was his housing thing that was, they were going to get it anyway, just rebranded, just like everything that he does. So, hey, don't fall for it. It was terrible, but this show wasn't. And I appreciate you listening. And thank you so much for hanging out with us on The Rational Revolution. I'm Mark Becker. We'll see you next week.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.